Oh hey, Dave Hill here, and this week on The Novelizers, from Catastrophe, Rob Delaney. From The Tonight Show, starring Jimmy Fallon, A.D. Miles. And from The Upright Citizens Brigade, Will Hines. This episode is so hot, it's practically on fire.
Don't want your popcorn, don't want your milk duds, don't want my shoes stuck in pools of sticky cola. Don't show me romance, don't show me fist fights, just show me words printed out.
Welcome to the novel. Oh, you want? I'll do that one.
Oh,
welcome to the Novelizers. We have such an amazing show this week, don't we, Dave?
Oh, don't even get me started. This week on the show, Batman makes a bust, and in the process, runs into a group of copycat vigilantes trying to stop the crime. Batman and Gordon convene in the bank to discuss the Joker's heist, and other crazy stuff happens too.
It's crazy. And here telling the story, joining us on the show tonight is, or today, or this morning, depending on when you're listening, an amazing cast of comedians and funny
totally.
People.
Totally. My friend Rob Delaney, he's a comedian and actor known for Catastrophe, Dying for Sex, and Bad Monkey. A.D. Miles, who's an actor and writer known for The Tonight Show, starring Jimmy Fallon, Horrible People, and Wet Hot American Summer.
And
also, No, go ahead.
He's my former boss.
Oh, your former boss.
My former boss.
Whoosh. Man.
Yeah.
Don't even tell me.
I will.
And don't forget Will Hines, who's known for his work teaching and running the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. And he's appeared on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, The Sex Lives of College Girls, Comedy Bang Bang, and much more.
Will is one of those guys who, once you know what he looks like, you see him everywhere.
That's exactly right.
On every show. Are you buddies with Will Hines? You must have worked with him at some point in your career.
I haven't seen him in a while, but yeah.
Well, you will hear him tonight on The Novel.
We were on an episode of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt together. I think that may have been the last time I saw him.
Is he a pro? I bet he's a pro.
Oh, real pro on the set.
Yeah.
Doesn't help himself to too much stuff at catering.
Well, I can't wait to hear that interview. All right. Rob Delaney. Novelize us.
Novelizers. Dark Knight. Chapter 2. Good-Natured Ribbing. Novelized by A.D. Miles. Narrated by Rob Delaney. Christ, how pathetic, Ramirez thought to herself as she watched her boss, Detective Wirtz, pick the crumbs of a fragged-out Nature Valley bar out of the belly folds of his shirt. But she knew that his heart was only two or three cigarettes away from the last arrest he'd ever experienced. An arrest of the cardiac variety. And as soon as that happened, she'd finally be promoted to head of the department and could start getting things done. But until then, she'd continue bringing Detective Wirtz his coffee and making small talk about the perennial topic of the day. Batman's somewhat theatrical harassment of small-time crooks, common burglars, and hubcap thieves. Like, what was it with that dude? She sort of gets the body armor in the cool car that looks like a rubber-toothed walrus. And maybe she could forgive the cape since it probably made him invisible or something. But what was with the little pointy ears on the top of his head? Like he clearly had invested a ton of money in some next-level tech, every part of his whole getup serving some practical purpose. But then, right when he was ready to hit the streets for the first time, he was like, wait, it's missing something. Little decorative ears that are both pointy and pointless. It made no sense. Of course, neither did a bat signal that took a crane and a flatbed truck to move around. Like, by the time you hoisted that gigantic beacon into place and fired it up, whatever crime you were trying to alert Batman about would be over. It must be a male ego thing. The need to spooge your logo all over the city while you kung-fu'd stumble-drunk drug addicts in back alleys and swooped snatched purses back to their owners. Of course, Ramirez kept this all to herself. She knew the game. She was a detective in the Major Crimes Unit, and if she wanted to outlive Wirtz, she had to show she could hang. That meant bringing him his coffee while breaking his balls with a little good-natured ribbing, the way all cops do. She nodded at the TV blaring above Wirtz's desk, where some Farmer Ted-looking nerd was interviewing the mayor about Gotham's bat problem. You hear that? Mayor says you got the Batman in your sights, Ramirez teased. Wirtz picked a large chunk of granola out of the wet woolen cave of his belly button and popped it into his mouth. I bet I find that guy way before you find any guy, you satchel-assed old maid.
Jesus, Ramirez flinched, more from the blast of Four Roses vapor coming from Wirtz's breath than the clumsy insult. But also, like, what the hell? She was only 30, and relationships seemed like a drag. Another dude getting all bent out of shape every 3 seconds because she didn't want to listen to his latest passive income scheme or some shit. Oh, thanks. She watched Wirtz wad up a blank piece of paper and hurl it at some insane collage he'd put together on his bulletin board. A grainy photo of Bigfoot, a picture of Elvis, and an image of Abraham Lincoln. What the fuck was this supposed to be? Did he think one of them was the Batman? Was he equally obsessed with finding those characters as well as the Batman? Wirtz softly farted and began to snore. She just shook her head. With any luck, he'd pass away in his sleep and there'd be one less scrote between her and running the entire department. Speaking of old scrotes, Ramirez figured she should probably go kiss the ring of Lieutenant Gordon, and she knew just where to find him. Standing next to the bat signal up on the roof. You know, in case Batman needs to know where the fucking police department is. Gordon was always on the roof, mooning over the bat signal, pining really, desperate for a visit from his body-suited bro-friend. And sure enough, as soon as she stepped out of the bulkhead, she saw him, peering into the darkness, his hair tousled by the breeze as if Gotham herself were trying to match his size of longing. Ramirez mustered up a little expositional small talk. Ever plan on seeing your wife again, Lieutenant? Gordon wheeled around. Do you ever plan on seeing your terminally ill mother in the hospital before she croaks, Detective? For fuck's sake, thought Ramirez. What is it with these old white dudes and their 0-100 escalation of good-natured ribbing? They're so fragile. She changed the subject. So he hasn't shown up? No, said Gordon, and I've bat-signaled him twice. I don't want to seem desperate, but maybe he just didn't see the first one. What do you think? Should I signal him again? I mean, if he wanted to see me, he'd come, right? God, I'm so lame. Gordon turned his attention to the bat signal itself, fiddling with one of the knobs, hoping in vain that maybe if he just turned up the brightness a bit, Batman would see it. But what Gordon couldn't have known was that Batman would not have seen the signal no matter how bright it was, because at that exact moment, he was in a parking garage chasing after his own obsession, a meeting of small-time thugs with various foreign accents. A white panel van had just barreled into the garage, followed by several black SUVs, like a herd of Uber blacks closing in on a wounded Amazon delivery driver. The vehicles came to rest and disgorged their respective breeds of thugs. The white van thugs had sour expressions, belying tough, violent childhoods with little to no hugging, while the SUV thug was a ponytailed bossy type who spoke loudly as if he were speaking to a much larger crowd. Ponytail opened the back of his SUV and, surprising no one, revealed a pack of drooling attack dogs that he might as well have stolen from the estate of Montgomery Burns. Meanwhile, a drug dealer with a bag over his head dick-swinged out of his SUV, and he and Ponytail began outlining their beef through braggadocious blurts of swagger. "Your drugs are ruining my customers' lives," Ponytail complained. "I need them addicted, but functional enough to still hold down jobs so they can buy more drugs." "Ha," cackled Baghead unsympathetically. "Sometimes what fucks you up can also bring you down." It was not a bad point in the general sense, but it didn't directly address Ponytail's complaint. Suddenly, in a development that could only be described as a first draft relic, a set piece of copycat Batman began flitting around the shadows of the parking garage. Wearing what appeared to be black trash bags and worn-out rain boots, these new Batman looked like they just crawled out of the picked-over bargain bin of a Halloween pop-up store. Their plan had been to surround the thugs and then simultaneously reveal themselves in sort of a typical Batmanian flourish, but the goddamn attack dogs had begun barking the second they heard the rustle of cheap costume plastic, forcing these erstwhile Batmen to engage much sooner than planned. This led to the premature brandishing of their bat blasters, which upon closer inspection were just cheap Walmart shotguns spray-painted with black Rust-Oleum. A shot rang out, and things had gotten very real very fast. In what must have seemed like a relief to our cosplay Batman, the real Batman used the gunshot as his cue to come crashing through the wall of the parking garage. This not only stole focus from everyone else involved, but also indicated that Batman has a certain hierarchy of concerns, and property damage to innocent business owners ranks far below small-time thug thwarting. As Batman started dance-fighting his way into the fray, the various thugs patiently waited their turn to step forward and get their ass kicked. After systematically neutralizing one after the other, the remaining thugs piled into a panel van to escape, motivated by either self-preservation or boredom. But by this point, Batman was very horny for thug meat, and so he whipped out his barbed metal prong and mounted the fleeing van. But before he could finish, he was knocked off the van by the invincible girth of a concrete column and he rolled to the ground, his body throbbing in exquisite pain. That's when he executed his undeniable closer, a pirouette over the railing of the parking garage's downward exit spiral, landing on top of the van, denting the roof, and thereby making the vehicle completely undrivable. As the thugs whimpered beneath Batman's quivering satisfaction, one of them looked up at him, and in a Sharks versus Jets accent that demonstrated both street smarts and street stupidity, he said,
"How come yous get to be the Batman and we don't?"
"Because I'm not wearing black yoga pants," Batman snapped back in a performative whisper growl that petered out towards the end.
One definitely got the sense that Batman wasn't exactly confident in the vocal choice he'd made when he first started honing his batness. He was just trying things out when he used it while subduing a couple of looters carrying mini Bose speakers out of a Black Friday sale. And since they'd already heard it, he figured he had to stick with it.
"Like Mel Tillis stammer," he remembers Alfred saying. "It's nothing like that," Batman wheezed as menacingly as possible.
But yeah, he thought to himself, it was kind of like the Mel Tillis stammer. An attention-seeking gimmick that eventually becomes a millstone around a performer's neck. Of course, none of this foolishness would have surprised Ramirez, who was currently watching Gordon bound up the steps of this bank that had just been robbed. Gordon so clearly loved ducking under the police tape as he entered a crime scene. He flashed his badge to literally no one and jogged over to Ramirez. She showed him an 8x10 glossy of the Joker, criminal mastermind who'd perpetrated the bank robbery while also pushing his primal wound expressed as criminal clown vibe. Gordon glanced at the photo. "I wonder what he's hiding under all the face paint," he wondered on the nosely. Gordon then turned and skipped up a second set of stairs to the bank in such a jaunty fashion that he was practically floating. It was a gleeful enthusiasm that Ramirez found confusing until she joined Gordon in the bank vault. Of course, Batman was there.
Give us the room, please," Gordon blurted out greedily, a goofy smile percolating across his lips.
"Whatever," muttered Ramirez as she exited the vault. "Enjoy Broke Bat Mountain." Inside the vault, Batman pondered the photo of the Joker as Gordon peppered him with intel. "The rest of the gang were just a bunch of local petty crime types," he said, his tone implying that there was more where that came from. Much more. But the Batman either didn't notice or actively ignored Gordon's flirtatious teasing out the details of the crime report. Batman just waved his bat Geiger counter over the stack of bills and croaked,
"These the marked bills I gave you."
"Oh, yes," Gordon blurted. "We used all of them. I made sure of it. I was like, hey, Batman gave us these marked bills to use, and you bet your ass we're using them. That's a given. So, yeah."
It was then that Batman noticed something. A clue, perhaps. He held up a stack of bills and chafed out an announcement.
"I think we've got a winner."
But Gordon, who was across the room and under an air conditioning vent, misheard Batman's hushed suggestion as,
"I think we should grab some dinner."
Gordon closed his eyes in an effort to settle his voice, measuring out his response. "I mean, I just ate, but I could have a drink or whatever while you got something. Or I could just have a second dinner. Why not?" Gordon winced at how cringe he sounded. He opened his eyes slowly, sure that Batman would be looking at him like WTF. But Batman had in fact Irished out during Gordon's clumsy little speech. He was gone.
Vanished into the dark night. N-I-G-H-T, not K-N-I-G-H-T.
We'll be right back after this. And we are back. Thank you, Rob Delaney and 80 Miles. Of course, every single week on the show, we find an interview, someone who actually worked on the film, The Dark Knight. Is this week an exception?
No.
No. We have that interview.
Great.
Let's hear it.
Hello. We are back with another interview portion of the Novelizers podcast. Today, I am here with Will Hines. And Will was Heath Ledger's makeup artist on the film The Dark Knight. Hi, Will. How are you?
Hi. So nice to be here.
What an iconic character in an, you know, one of the best blockbuster action films of all time.
I agree.
His makeup is such a huge part of it. So tell me about your experience and how you got involved.
Yeah, I would say the makeup is a big part of it because it's one of the, you know, biggest public mistakes of my career. I do think that the movie is great. And I think Heath's performance ended up being great despite the makeup snafus. But yeah, you're actually talking about part of my career that is a real mixed blessing for me. Great to be involved with such a huge film, but I did not want his makeup to look like that. I wanted the lipstick to be neat, and I wanted the eyeshadow to be pristine. I wanted the white foundation to be evenly spread. And then, you know, but one thing would lead to another, and by the time they would call action, his makeup would be everywhere. I would try to get in there and fix it, and it never happened. And so, honestly, I can't watch the movie.
Okay. This is unexpected. I thought you'd be really proud of it because it's such a huge part of the film.
I've heard it's great.
You haven't seen the film?
No, I've heard it's great, and I know that people love it, which makes me happy, and I don't want to take away from people's joy, but I'll just tell you that that makeup looks insane.
Okay, I have to say, I think that's kind of part of what makes that character so brilliant is,
sure.
is the whole vibe of him kind of falling apart and being a kind of a mess. I think that's really important to the character. I thought that was intentional. I thought that was your intention.
Absolutely not. It was nobody's intention. Here's what would happen. Look, I'm glad that you like it, but what's happening is enough other things in the film went right that you're just making excuses for this obvious mistake. I mean, look at it. It's a mess. It doesn't. Okay. Who would do makeup like that? Who would put lipstick on their face and just like smear it around? That's nuts.
He's an agent of chaos. He wants chaos. Shouldn't his face reflect the chaos that he's creating in the world in Gotham?
Disagree with that interpretation of the character entirely. I don't see any chaos in the Joker. I see beauty. I see organization. I see charm.
Here's what happened. I see charm. Mm-hmm.
Heath would get the makeup done. We'd have it locked up and perfect. They'd say, last looks. And I would, you know, make his makeup just ever so right. And then everybody would just kiss his face. Everyone would just start kissing Heath Ledger. Everybody, the crew.
When you say everyone, the gaffer, who are you talking about?
Christopher Nolan, Michael Caine, crew, Crafty. They would just like kiss and smear their face onto his like beautiful face. They'd be like, you're so beautiful. And they would just kiss him and kissy, kiss, kiss, kiss. And I'd be like, what are you doing? And then Nolan would be like, we got to go. And shout action.
So last looks and then just a swarm of people from actors, from co-stars to the Crafty guy. Swarm Heath's face. Slobber all over it. And then they would go, oh, shoot, we already called last looks. And action.
That is exactly right. And the Crafty guy, Al, was the most egregious. He kissed him more than anybody. The weird thing of this is then everyone would have white makeup on their face. So I'd look around and just see little mini Jokers everywhere in the film.
Yeah, I mean, what about the co-stars? Like, wouldn't they have makeup on their face in scenes where they're with him?
Yes, CGI'd out. The budget was crazy. The budget is mostly CGI-ing makeup off the other people's faces, which I was like, hey, can we CGI the makeup right on Heath's face? And they would just,
I think CGI-ing makeup on a moving actor is very, very expensive.
It's very expensive. Oh, yeah, they had to bring
in. That's why they have makeup artists.
That's right. That's right. Drove me nuts. I was so mad.
How did Christopher Nolan let this happen? I mean, if he, because my perception is this is intentional. This actually is so fitting for the character. It's like so compelling that his face is just kind of reflecting the chaos inside of him.
No.
And he likes it that way. It feels like he likes it that way. You know, Heath is playing it that this is part of who he is.
Nolan did not want it this way. He shrugged it off. He was like, well, I guess we got to go with it. Because Nolan's very loosey-goosey with stuff.
Is he? That's surprising to me. In what other ways? What's he loosey-goosey about?
Plot. I mean, the plot's mostly improvised. He doesn't really have it worked out.
The plot cannot be improvised. This movie
is
so
improvised.
How do you know?
The plot's mostly improvised. Batman was supposed to be dead. For most of the drafts, Batman died about halfway through the film.
Then what happens after that?
Well, they just figured it would just become Alfred's movie. Alfred would step up.
I do love Alfred, so I don't actually disagree with that decision. But then what, didn't they want this to be a trilogy from the beginning? I mean, this is only part two, right? So like,
it was going to be, Alfred was going to be the star of the third film.
And what were they going to call that?
The Butler Rises.
Okay. Yeah. I can get on board with that, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. But,
you know, it didn't go that way. The scene where Christian Bale was supposed to die, he improvised some cool stuff and Nolan's like, I like it. Let's keep it. And so Batman lives.
Wow.
Drove me nuts.
And then rises. Like,
this has been a habit for me. The last movie I did before Dark Knight that was also supposed to be a huge thing was 28 Days Later. And I had the zombies makeup. These guys looked great. Everybody had like nice, serene expressions, calm makeup. And then, but these were beautiful extras. Everybody kissed each other. And then the zombies in 28 Days Later all looked nuts.
Well, I've never heard of people like just freaking out and kissing each other.
I haven't either.
Set. So where is this coming from?
I don't know.
Is this only happening for movies that you're working on?
I guess so. But I mean, I can assure you that it was not my intention. I had no reason to want this to happen. You know, I don't want swarms of people.
Yeah.
Just kissing.
Yeah, I mean, if you made his face look perfect, and then that's what we see in the movie, I can only imagine the number of people, the sheer number of people smooching and rubbing slobber all over his face in order for it to look like that once we see it.
It'd be a minimum of like 15 ways of people every take.
Would Heath kiss back?
You know, Heath's great with people. He just really he would do little kissy noises and say thank you so much, and it'd be like thank you so much, you know. Sign a couple autographs. He signed autographs for Christopher Nolan like 5 times a day.
Christopher Nolan would continually ask Heath Ledger to sign autographs for him?
Nolan loved this guy. And for good reason. Heath's a terrific artist. I mean,
terrific, yeah.
R.I.P., you know, we lost a great one.
Yeah.
And I was saddened to hear of it. Don't believe me. I had nothing against the guy. I mean, even though he's wearing some of my worst work I've ever done.
What other films have you worked on?
So I worked on 28 Days Later.
Mm-hmm. And you were unhappy with that.
Because that also had a lot of kissing. And the zombies, I wanted them to look neat and put together and composed. And they looked insane. And that drove me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I worked on Beetlejuice. That was my first job, was Beetlejuice in 1987.
And how did you feel
about
that?
A completely different look for Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice had no clown aspects at all.
What?
But people would just come up and kiss on Michael Keaton and just would look crazy.
So what? If this has been happening, it sounds like this has been happening your entire career. Once you start a new film, can't you preemptively say, like, we've got to stop the kissing?
Yes.
Like, for my
I do say
work.
That.
Okay.
Yes.
And what happens?
Well, people think I'm nuts. They're like, well, yeah, okay, sure. Well, yeah, they're like, yeah, we don't want waves of people kissing the star. They kind of roll their eyes. I'm like, it's going to happen. And they're like, well, okay, great. But then those very people, the lawyers are on set kissing the star. The people who were supposed to protect, the people who made the deal.
What is the shift? So they're almost laughing at you. They're even suggesting this could happen. And then as soon as they hear the words last looks, it's like.
Last looks, yeah.
It's like a cue to go kiss the star.
I don't know what it is. I mean.
Have you ever kissed someone you've worked on the makeup for them?
Yes, sometimes, you know, consensually. Consensually, I'll be like, hey, can I give you a little smooch? You look great. Just something, a little smooch in the cheek or something. Or can I do a little cheek-to-cheek rub? Kind of like.
And you ask it like that. And then they say yes.
Yes or they say no. Usually they say yes. And I just give them a little cheeky-cheek rub and send them on their
way.
Is
this also after you've completed the makeup? So are you kind of at fault?
Sometimes it's after
I've completed it.
Sometimes I've been at fault. I have sometimes messed, you know, Michael Caine, I couldn't resist kissing the guy. I love a great actor.
Yeah. Yeah, kissable face.
He's a sweetheart.
Face. He is a sweetheart, and he definitely has a kissable face.
And he's got a great breath.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. Who doesn't have good breath?
Oh, I couldn't say. I don't want to say. It'd be rude. It'd be rude to reveal.
Fair enough. Okay, so you're working on the film. You're kind of just, blown away by how awful this,
Who's the star of 28 Days Later?
I couldn't possibly.
He is Kalen. It's not Ewan McGregor. It's the guy with the big wide eyes who was in Oppenheimer.
Yeah, I definitely know it's not Ewan McGregor. I don't.
Well, that guy's got terrible breath. Cillian Murphy, maybe?
Yes, Cillian. Is it Murphy? Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Murphy.
There's no way to find out. But whoever that guy was had terrible breath. But he was a tilapia hound. He would have tilapia right before most takes.
Would he order that on his own, or was that something that Crafty just knew to have on hand? Or?
He requested it. They had to have it on hand for him. It was part of his deal.
Well, I like tilapia, so if I were working on the film, would I have been able to have it, or was it just only
yes,
set
he was
aside
very
for
generous.
Killian?
Everybody was allowed to have it.
Okay, that's so sweet.
It's he was a nice guy. I mean, he smelled like a food truck, but he was a sweet guy. And he deserves his accolades. And, you know, on the screen, you can't tell that. So Cillian Murphy. That's this guy. Cillian Murphy? Who the hell knows? I never talked to him. But
he probably gets both. Yeah.
Yeah. I kissed him a little bit. And he was a sweet guy. And his makeup looked great in 28 Days Later. The zombies were the ones getting kissed.
Yeah.
It drove me crazy. I don't know what it is.
Each other, the zombies?
Yeah. Once the kissing started, it was like a frenzy.
Well, especially with zombies. I mean, if they're in character,
I excuse that a little bit. There's no excuse for Heath Ledger to be kissing on the crafty guy. That was unprofessional.
But he wasn't kissing. They were kissing on him.
eventually he would get into it. He would be like, hey, you're not getting away with it. And you're not missing a kiss. And he would go up to someone and just like give him a little kiss on the cheek. And I'd be like, I mean, Keith.
Crazy. You were upset with him. I did.
I'm glad people liked the movie. I'm telling you, makeup is not the storyboards for the Joker. I drew Jackie Kennedy because that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted Joker to look like. Like,
doesn't he have a whole monologue about how he doesn't have plans? That's mm-hmm. what Commissioner mm-hmm. Gordon and like that is.
Mm-hmm.
That is exactly what he doesn't represent, is planning or being meticulous. He says that what he wants is to be an agent of chaos. I just feel like the makeup kind of falling off his face. And each time, you know, he has a different story about how he got the smile each time. And like, I don't know, as a viewer, I love that it's kind of all falling off his face. It's just a representation of what's going on inside, you know, and what's happening to Gotham.
I picture those monologues in quotes.
Elaborate.
Like, sarcastic, like I'm kidding. That's how I, because I couldn't think of any other way to make it work. The Joker's kidding, you know. He's making a joke about how messy he is.
He does joke, and he does kill a lot. You know, he tells a lot of things that aren't true, and that's why people are running around. You know, because
he's a liar.
Exactly. He's dressing the hostages up as Jokers. You know, that's something that's crazy. Confusing. That's a lie. Yeah,
the makeup on those guys wasn't what I wanted either.
Well, a lot of those are masks, right? Didn't they have?
Yeah.
Were you involved with the masking part of
that? That was my last ditch effort. I was like, okay, just put these masks on because the makeup's going to be insane.
Mm-hmm. But then Heath would always have the makeup underneath. So even if he took the mask off, he still got
God, don't even remind me. I'm glad I never saw the film.
Well, I have to say, like, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but it is such a good movie. I think you'd like it. Like, I would hope that you would be able to sort of separate yourself. And his performance is incredible, you know?
I don't know if I could watch it. You know a movie whose makeup I did that I did like? Showgirls.
I was just going to ask. Oh, okay. So that's...
They look great in Showgirls. They look exactly like I wanted.
Okay. And what did you want?
I wanted, you know, slightly broad performances. You know, I want them to put a little heft on it, you know, but just very attractive people being reasonable with each other. That's what I think Showgirls is about. What if moderate...
Attractive people being reasonable with each other.
Yeah, attractive people just being reasonable with each other. just being right down the middle, moderate centrists solving problems. That, to me, the tagline of Showgirls is moderate centrists solving problems.
Boy, I do not think that's what reads when you...
I watch that movie every day, and I think it comes through loud and
clear. You
watch
Showgirls every day?
Every day. Because I'm like, this is...
First thing in the morning? What time of the day do you watch this movie?
1 p.m. It's my after-lunch break, when I'm waiting for the food to digest.
Got it. It's like your siesta.
It's like my siesta. Yeah. Little mental siesta.
Do you know it word for word? You know the whole movie?
I know word for word.
Can you start us off from the top?
What part do you want me to say? Opening line?
Opening line.
Okay. L.A., what a city. Problems are here and they're meant to be solved. Cut to a strip show.
Oh my God, I believe you. I mean, that's incredible. I can't wait to watch it.
You never seen it?
Day. No, I've never seen it. No.
Oh, you love it. That deserves a trilogy.
You've never seen The Dark Knight and you worked on it. I've never seen Showgirls. I had nothing to do with it. Pretty much the same.
pretty much the same, yeah.
So you really loved Showgirls and you loved your work on it. Is there anything else as a makeup artist that you've done that you really felt proud of?
I like movies that execute their vision. What else have I done? Yeah. I did Borderlands. I love that. Mm. I thought that everything looked great. I liked, I did a version of Death Becomes Her without effects that I think was good, but they scrapped it and redid it with effects, which I've heard is good.
Okay. I didn't watch a lot of the things that you've been involved in.
I tell you what, I did the original cut of Friday the 13th, and I got into a fight with the director, and he hated what I did so much they redid it with the hockey mask on the guy.
Stop it.
Yeah.
What was your vision? What was your original vision?
Pristine face? Clown face. Super pretty clown face.
So you really have, you've gravitated toward clown your whole life.
I've always wanted to do a great clown. Uh-huh. And I thought Dark Knight was going to be it.
Mm.
I mean, I really slaved over it. Yeah, but Friday the 13th, I gave him a pristine clown face. Not that anybody would know. They put that stupid hockey mask on him, but I guess the film was successful, so I can't argue with it.
Yeah. I mean,
I did it, and I was allowed to do the makeup of everybody except for Pennywise.
Oh, wow. So that must have been really hard for you. Yes.
I was non-clown guy on Pennywise, on It. Mm. Which is, they had one person who did clown makeup.
And who was that?
Christopher Nolan.
Christopher Nolan did the makeup. And that was
the makeup
after Dark Knight.
Way after.
Yeah.
He was a super successful director. It was weird. He would come in the makeup trailer and put makeup on Pennywise, kiss his face till it all looked wild, and then send him on his way.
Were you getting along with Chris at this point, or what was your
relationship? I respect him as a director, but I couldn't talk to him in there. I was like, you're doing my dream, and you took away my last dream.
And messing it up.
And messing it up.
Messing it up. And doing it the wrong way.
I know. Yeah. It's a shame.
Have you ever tried to direct a film that he's working on instead? Kind of come in and sort of
That's a great idea. Direct his movie?
Yeah.
And hire him as a makeup guy?
Yeah. Sounds like he's open to it.
He's wild. I should do it. You know what? I should just give him a taste of my medicine.
Yeah,
you know? Call it messy clowns. And then every time he's in there making messy clown makeup, I neaten it up. And I'm like, how does this feel?
Yeah. I mean,
take his vision away from him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, I mean, the movie did so well. It's such an iconic movie. Oh, God, yes. Are you kidding me? I mean, it's one of the highest grossing, you know, action films, at least at the time. I think it was one of the highest grossing films of the year. And I mean, that was at a time when movies like this weren't being nominated. And this was nominated like across the board for all different kinds of, you know, major awards. And that was unusual for something like this kind of film. Yeah. You know, if I were you, there would be a part of me that would want to just say, like, actually, people like this so much, you know? And
maybe I'll just pretend like it was my idea.
I think you probably get a lot of credit for that. Okay.
Absolutely not. If you are a makeup artist, you're nothing without your integrity.
Okay. That's, I know that about a lot of professions. I wouldn't assume that makeup would be a huge integrity business, but sure.
No, for makeup, number one is integrity.
Uh huh. What's number two?
Contouring.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shading.
Number three is shading. Yeah.
Yeah. And what's something unexpected that's really important to makeup artists?
Salisbury steak.
Why?
Salisbury steak is the perfect scent for a makeup room.
Oh, for the person who's receiving it,
it sets the right mood. A nice sizzling Salisbury steak. The makeup artist doesn't eat it, but the people in the chair really puts them in the right headspace.
Oh, so they're eating it while you're putting the makeup on.
They're eating it while you put the makeup on. Or it's just nearby.
I have to guess that would really mess up the makeup, though. Like when the few times I've had my makeup done, they're like, you know, don't move your mouth too much. Like I wouldn't have gum in my, you know? Yeah. Or like even if I'm going to drink something, it's like out of a straw afterwards, you know?
It's tough, but it's worth it for how good a mood they're in.
Mm. My advice to you, and I don't know if this has affected your career, would be to just take ownership of the Joker makeup. I know it would be hard for your integrity, but my God, it's a really big, important part of this film. And it makes you look really good if you intentionally...
I'll think about it. Can I do a plug here before I go?
Please do.
My portfolio is up on my website, jokermakeupwasamistake.com.
Oh, okay. So you're
Will Hines.
Yeah. So what I just suggested, if you're pitching that. So, well, great. Thank you so much. I'm sure this will get a lot of traffic to your site.
That'd be great.
Best of luck with everything.
Hey, best of luck to you.
Bye, Will.
Bye.
That was an incredible interview. Thanks so much for listening today or tonight or whenever you're listening. And special thanks to this week's guests, Rob Delaney, A.D. Miles, and Will Hines, my co-star on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
See you next time.
Bye. The Novelizers is hosted by me, Dave Hill, with Stephen Levinson, and produced by Stephen, Dennis DiClaudio, Cole Emhoff, Graham Douglas, Kevin Carter, Christine Bullen, Rob Kuttner, and Marla Radner, and distributed by Cincinnati Public Radio. Editing and mixing by Graham Douglas. Music by Cole Emhoff. Theme song by Andrew Lynn. Special thanks to Brad Combs and Parabolic Studio in Manhattan. Follow The Novelizers on Instagram and support us on Patreon. The Novelizers is written and recorded without the use of AI. The Novelizers is an unauthorized work of parody. Copyright 2025, Novelizers, LLC.